From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I, J.B. Pritzker, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Illinois, and that I will faithfully exercise the duties of Officer of Governor of Illinois, to the best of my ability. Thank you.
Let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory.
We will propose, debate, and pass a balanced budget this year. But be clear about this. I won't balance the budget on the backs of the starving, the sick, and the suffering. And I won't hollow out the functions of government to achieve an ideological agenda. I won't make government the enemy and government employees the scapegoats.
On December 3rd, 1818, Illinois became the 21st state. 200 years later, with the DNA of my formerly enslaved great-great-grandfather, William Stevens, as part of my genetic makeup, I am proud to stand before you as our state's first Black Lieutenant Governor.
Come on, Illinois, we're gonna rise up. When you're living on your knees, you rise up. We got JB, we're gonna rise up. Tell the people that we gonna...
It was a party-like atmosphere. A new governor, JB Pritzker, sworn into office this week. That inauguration ceremony taking place in Springfield. The governor also got down to business on some issues. We'll talk about that and some of the challenges that may lie ahead for him now that he's in office. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor, Daisy Contreras, IPR State House Reporter, and also IPR Reporter Jacqueline Driscoll joining us this week. And Jacqueline, I'll start with you. You were among those who were watching the inauguration take place at the what's now called the Bank of Springfield Center in downtown Springfield. And you watched that, Democrats rejoicing. Let me get your takeaway on some of the things that were said there.
It was a very exciting atmosphere. Daisy and I actually were kind of milling about the room and talking to both Democrats and Republicans, and both seemed like they were excited. Obviously, Democrats, because they do have the supermajority. They have J.B. Pritzker coming in as their governor, Democratic governor, so going to see some progressive ideas moving forward. But also even Republicans seemed a little, you know, okay, we're going to put these past 4 years behind us. We're going to move forward, and it's going to be a good day for Illinois.
And as we, and as Jacqueline was saying, as we heard, it was an extravagant inauguration ceremony that felt more like a concert. Mm-hmm. The music numbers kept people in the audience, both Democrats and Republicans, dancing in their seats. And that was followed by a very fancy reception at the Illinois State Fairgrounds, where the music performance was given by Maroon 5, which I must mention, who will also be performing at the Super Bowl in just 2 weeks. There were rumors floating around Paul McCartney would perform, but as we saw, that wasn't the case.
I'll still say George Ryan with Ray Charles may have topped them all, but that was still a big deal. That was a lot of interest that day. And Charlie, that's not uncommon for, I guess, for an inauguration. I mean, I think Bruce Rauner, there was a lot of excitement among people who'd supported him when he was sworn in. That tends to be the case in most of these.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where it's the dawn of a new day. You have a new administration coming in, and everybody's hopes are up, and there's talk about working together with people from the other party to move Illinois forward. We'll see how well that works out. In the case of Governor Rauner, it didn't work out very well at all, as Governor Pritzker alluded to in his inaugural address. I get the sense from hearing what Republicans are saying that they're kind of glad that the Rauner administration is now past tense also, and they're looking forward to being able to work with Pritzker. There's issues on which they're going to disagree for sure. Like Senate Minority Leader Bill Brady said the other day that on the graduated income tax, that's an area where they're just going to have to disagree. But there'll be other areas, he said, where they can work together. And I think that's kind of the atmosphere or the attitude that you want to see going forward, where people with differing philosophies can agree to disagree on some things, but can also work to find common ground on other issues where they can advance the state.
We also saw, though, I mean, just minutes after Now, Governor J.B. Pritzker finished up his speech. There was a statement sent out by GOP Chairman Tim Schneider saying basically we're going to hold Madigan, J.B. Pritzker, and all the Democrats accountable because, you know, they're the reason for Illinois' demise. So even though we're having Bill Brady and House Minority Leader Jim Durkin taking a more mild approach, seems to be a little bit more supportive, there is still that Republican voice out there that is very much against the progressive agenda.
Well, Brian, yeah, but I would look at Tim Schneider as being very much past tense. He's a guy who was handpicked, put in his position by Rauner, supported by Rauner's money. He lost, if I'm not mistaken, his race for the county board in Cook County. And so he's there on the sidelines. I would ignore whatever he has to say, and I would pay a lot more attention to what the legislative leaders have to say, because they're in the ball game, and he's somewhere out in the bleachers.
Well, and Schneider, that's kind of his role here. Mm-hmm. He's partisan in this matter, and he's trying to pump the Republicans up. Now, Brian, speaking of that, it was not what I'd call the most bipartisan speech that I heard given by J.B. Pritzker. He seemed to make some not-so-veiled references to Bruce Rauner in that speech, and Bruce Rauner sitting right there watching this all taking place.
Yeah, he sure did, and we heard a little bit of that at the top of the show. He went right after Governor Rauner, and what Democrats have said the governor was trying to do, Pritzker says, "I won't hollow out the functions of government to achieve an ideological agenda. I won't make government the enemy and government employees the scapegoats." And I've been reflecting a lot on in these past couple of weeks as we've been hearing these stories about the federal partial government shutdown. And we, of course, endured a 2-year partial government shutdown in Illinois that was largely the result of Governor Rauner wanting to use budget negotiations as leverage, as he once described it, as leverage to get changes in other areas of state government. And I think one of the reasons that I was trying to think through this, and I want to be fair to all sides here, but Governor Rauner campaigned, as we've talked about on this show, Governor Rauner campaigned as a sort of, I'm a businessman, I'm going to bring my can-do business successful attitude to making state government more efficient. And I don't have any particular union agenda. That's close to a quote, if not a quote, of what he said before he took office. And so I think there was a reasonable amount of optimism around his election. Pat Quinn was no favorite of the unions, and even a lot of Democrats didn't get along very well with Pat Quinn. And so people were somewhat optimistic when Rauner took office. And then it very quickly, the governor pivoted to he gave this lecture in Decatur at a community college, complete with a PowerPoint presentation on how unions were ruining government, particularly government employee unions like AFSCME, and things soured quickly from there. And I think with Pritzker, assuming he doesn't have a similar departure on what he campaigned on, he seems to have put a lot out there on the table in terms of what he wants to do, in terms of getting a graduated income tax for Illinois, expanding health care. I mean, there's not a secret that he has a very liberal or progressive, if you prefer, agenda. And so, Democrats are excited about that. Republicans maybe view it as sort of an inevitability at this point and think, well, if we can get input on the things that, where we can, say, capital construction, things like that, or if we can, soften the edges of these proposals that they're going to put through, then we'll be doing something. But this is the new reality in Illinois, and people seem to be acclimating themselves
to
it.
And like Brian said in his inauguration speech, Pritzker did outline what he sees as his focus for what he called the working families of Illinois, increasing the minimum wage, pay equity, labor rights, things that he started to work on right away.
Well, let me ask, and Daisy, let me just stay with you on this. I've heard a lot of these speeches before, and there's red meat in there for the people. It's a crowd that's come out to see you. Mostly supporters are going to be in that crowd. So he's throwing a lot of things that they want to hear, and some of the things that he said that were aimed at Bruce Rauner probably played pretty well in the room. I did not hear a whole lot about the state's budget problems and financial issues, including the pension debt the state has. I did not hear him bring that up unless I missed it. That seemed to be something that was missing, though.
I mean, he did say he did miss the pensions part, but he did bring up the budget, saying that, I will pass. There will be a balanced budget. He didn't say where the money was going to come from. And I think that's some of the criticism out there that, he does tout all of these things for reform, but where is the money going to come from?
And maybe it's too early, Charlie, for him to be getting into those types of specifics in a day like that.
Yeah, I didn't fault him for not getting into details about the budget. He said he's going to have a balanced budget. Well, we'll take that with a grain of salt. It depends on how you define balanced. I think it's pretty fair to say that at the end of his of this fiscal year and, say, a year from now, the state will not be in the black in the sense that they will not have their backlog of bills totally paid off. They won't have the pension debt resolved. But on the other hand, if during the course of the fiscal year we spend less money than we take in so that the bill backlog goes down, one could argue that that means the budget was balanced for that fiscal year. So I look at this as being a multi-year project to kind of get us in better fiscal shape. There's the challenges are just too big to get done in 1 year.
Well, Brian, one of the things...
And I think even that, I was just saying, even what Charlie said, though, spending less money than we take in a given year, particularly if, you know, as some people are worrying, the U.S. goes into recession and Illinois revenues typically tank after that if there's a recession, then, you know, that'll be even harder. I think what Pritzker wants to do probably is limp through until he can try and get a graduated income tax and sort of rejigger the tax rates and adjust the revenue the state collects at that point.
Well, Brian,
that would be 2 years from now.
Brian, let's talk about the first full day in office for the governor. The first action he took was aimed at, I guess, making quite a few unionized government employees rather happy.
Yeah, well, this comes after he made his own employees rather happy, or at least about 20 people in his office, as we talked about last week, by personally putting in his own money to double their salaries. There were some questions when that came up about, you know, how are state employees going to react to this? Well, he is attempting to differentiate himself from Governor Rauner. As we said, he talked in his speech about not demonizing state employees. And in fact, he said this series of orders that he put through on his first day, some were executive orders. There was a piece of legislation. Some were just sort of directives from the governor's office. But state employees have been working under what's essentially, you know, we often say their contract expired. These are unionized state employees 4 years ago. The union says it didn't actually expire. It's just been kind of frozen in place during this while this negotiations have stalled. Point being, Governor Rauner said he was not going to give step increases. These are longevity pay raises that unionized state employees get. If you have X number of years service, you're entitled to, you know, an increase in your pay for every so many years. Governor Rauner had frozen those. Pritzker said, we're going to put people at the step they should be at from this point forward and then work out what we're going to do retrospectively. Now, this is something that the state, the governor's budget office, Governor Rauner's budget office, has said in disclosures that could cost $500 million this year alone, depending on if the courts had ruled all these back increases had to be paid. So this is something that Pritzker I don't think he quite committed to paying people retroactively for all these things. But if he does do that, yet another hole in the Illinois budget this year.
And Daisy, Jacqueline, I know that there are going to be people who say this does not send the right message, a state with fiscal problems on day one to do something like this, even if it may be something that, you know, eventually he wants to get done.
Right. I mean, even Illinois Republican Party Chairman Tim Schneider, as Jacqueline mentioned earlier, he's been a critical voice here, and he sent out a statement saying that Pritzker has made reckless spending promises without saying for sure how much things will cost. So, yes, that is one of the biggest criticisms.
Mm-hmm. But I would point out, as Brian mentioned, it wasn't Pritzker saying just kind of on a whim or a lark, oh, I think we should do these step increases, if I'm not mistaken. The courts have said this, the Labor Relations Board has said this, and the Rauner administration just kind of ignored what the judicial mandate was. So it wasn't a Pritzker just pulling this out of his hat. What he's saying is, I'm going to follow what the courts say we have to do.
And he did have, of course, quite a bit of union support during the campaign. So this, you could make an argument, this is a quick payback for that support.
You could say that, or you could also say that he's going to follow the rule of law.
One of the other things that took place this week, gun dealer licensing. This piece of legislation has been debated for quite a while. didn't go to Governor Rauner's desk. The legislature decided to wait on that. They sent it to J.B. Pritzker, and he took some quick action. And Daisy, fill us in on what this would do.
Yeah, so this would authorize state regulation of firearms dealers. So, and this will take effect in 6 months. Dealers are already regulated by the federal government, but those who support this new law say the oversight is spread out too thin. And by having state-level oversight, it will be easier to track illegal gun sales and thefts. So under the measure, firearm dealers will have to purchase a five-year permit, $1,500 for retail stores and $300 for independent dealers. They will have to install video surveillance for areas where purchases are being made. They will also have to maintain an electronic inventory and provide employee training that will help them identify straw purchases. And so, like you said, Sean, the piece of legislation has an interesting timeline. Lawmakers approved this idea twice last year. Rauner vetoed the first version. Then another version was introduced, also approved by the General Assembly. But since we were in the middle of a campaign, Rauner had publicly expressed he would also veto that second version. And so Democrats decided to hold the bill and wait until Pritzker was sworn in.
And Rauner, vetoing the bill, said that, you know, those smaller gun dealers' shops are going to be too burdened by this cost. So kind of sticking up for the small guy.
Well, and when you think about it, this to me is a very good example of the difference in the gun culture downstate to maybe the Chicago area, because really the support for this came more from the Chicago region, where they've had a lot of gun crime issues. Charlie, this is a good signal of that. People downstate looking at this and thinking, hey, this is attacking, again, our way of life. We use guns for sport, maybe even for protection, but you know, we don't have the amount of crime that you see in other parts of the state.
Well, it's always been a regional issue that way. It's one of the rare issues, controversial issues, that doesn't break along party lines. It's more Southern Illinoisans and Western Illinoisans, whether they're Republican or Democrat, generally tend to be strong supporters of Second Amendment rights. People from Chicago and the suburbs, whichever party, they tend to be more concerned about trying to limit the gun violence. I mean, if you grew up downstate, when you think of firearms, you probably think of deer hunting or duck hunting. If you grew up in Chicago, when you think of firearms, you think of gangbangers who can't shoot straight, killing little girls. And so it's a totally different mindset. But it's interesting because this legislation, the sponsor, the Senate sponsor, Don Harmon, had been working on this for like forever. I think he said 16 years,
yeah,
that he's been introducing this bill before he could finally get it passed and signed into law.
I think it's important to note, too, when they initially passed, because, Daisy, you followed this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was near, right around the shooting at the school in Florida, Valentine's Day shooting.
Yeah, and Harmon has said that, you know, this is what has made it so that, you know, we could get more support, recent events happening across the country.
Wasn't there some talk, though, that maybe this was duplicative, that there was some oversight of like this taking place and other people were watching this? It didn't have to be the state doing it?
Yeah, I mean, with the doubled of the paperwork, right? So the federal government already has oversight. So now applying for a state license, that kind of makes it hard for, and that's the argument, that it will be hard. And now the Illinois State Rifle Association promised a lawsuit to challenge this.
Yeah, lawsuits will likely be coming on this.
Yeah, has it been filed yet?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Brian, before we move off of the inauguration week and such, of course, J.B. Pritzker, not the only person who was inaugurated. All the statewide elected officials were sworn in. Any takeaways from what you heard from other people on the podium that day?
Yeah, I would mention Attorney General Kwame Raoul made a point of saying that his office was going to bring a new or an increased, if you at least, emphasis to the problem of gun violence across the state. He also talked about emphasizing workers' protections, things that I think in the past we might have thought of as the responsibility of the Department of Labor, but he was talking about things like wage theft and issues like that, and really using his office to try and enforce worker rights. And then just, I also was think it's notable the reception that Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton got. You know, if anyone who's been to a sporting event, your team's down in the seventh inning, that moment when everybody starts leaving the ballpark en masse, I think you might expect that to happen after a governor's inauguration, but it didn't actually happen this time until after the lieutenant governor was sworn in that people began streaming out of the inaugural ceremony. And Juliana Stratton got raucous applause for her speech, and I think she has really become a pretty significant figure, more so than other lieutenant governors that I can remember, in just among the Democratic constituency. She is. She talked about her own personal story. I think we heard it, the audio in the top of the show, about, you know, she has the DNA of one of her ancestors who was a slave. And, you know, how remarkable is it that she is now the lieutenant governor? She says she's the first African-American lieutenant governor. And in fact, we now are in this situation where we have what would you call it? Minority-majority of the constitutional officers in Illinois government.
Majority-minority.
Yeah, did I say that backwards?
Switch it around, there you go.
Okay, so it's three African-Americans and a Latina woman who are holding our statewide offices. So pretty striking.
Well, once the J.B. Pritzker has now taken over government, I'm sure even before this happened, once the election was done, he started to hear from people about what they wanted. Things, you know, funding primarily is what you're going to hear. And here's the state again. We talked about the fiscal problems that face the state of Illinois. This week, the Illinois State Board of Education comes out with a big budget request. The Illinois Board of Higher Education's already made theirs. Nobody is looking right now to settle for the status quo. I think a lot of folks think, hey, you know, the happy days are here again. We need money to do our jobs. And, you know, they may be rightly so in some of these cases, but he's got a lot on his plate, and he's going to probably have to say no, I would think, to a lot of these people. Charlie, this is where the honeymoon starts to end.
Yeah, and for me, someone who's been watching this for a very long time, what the State Board of Education did and what the Board of Higher Ed did in requesting what seemed like astronomical increases kind of goes back to what things were like 30 years ago, in the sense that the boards are supposed to recommend what in their best judgment is required for the K-12 in the case of the State Board of Education, and for our colleges and universities in the case of Board of Higher Education, the amount of money they need to be able to fulfill their mission. Now, the State Board is not expecting that they're going to get like an 86% increase or whatever the number is in total funding. Now, they're not going to get the money. I don't think any of them expects in their wildest dreams that the legislature is going to almost double their appropriation. But they put the number out there so that people are aware of the challenges. This will get thrown in the mix with the requests that are being made privately by the various departments. Typically what happens is in the fall, the departments will come into the state's Bureau of the Budget, and they'll make all these requests for what they want. The Bureau of the Budget will negotiate, and this all happens behind closed doors in the administration. They'll negotiate a number on which the directors of the departments have to follow or agree, and they'll put that all together in the budget, weighing one thing against the other, and then that will be the budget that the governor presents to the General Assembly.
And Brian, I think as the governor, as a new governor coming in, you, of course, there was a lot of things you believe in. You've talked to him about, you had a sit-down interview with him, talked to him about a lot of issues. I'm guessing he would like to fund education at a higher level and higher education and all this. How does he balance all that out?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I did ask him specifically about that higher ed number. And it's higher ed is an interesting case. And at full disclosure, everybody on the panel here is an employee of the University of Illinois system today. But the Board of Education points out that it is the one area of the state budget that they've been able to identify where the amount appropriated for operations is actually less in real dollars, not even adjusting for inflation, but in real dollars than it was a couple of decades ago. And the state support for higher ed has been going way down. Now, if you also include the amount of money that the state kicks in for pension contributions for higher ed, that's a different story. And so we've seen the money shift from, one way of looking at this is that the money has shifted from operations to pensions. But Sean, you asked about what Governor Pritzker says about this. Getting back to that, he did talk a lot about education on the campaign trail, and he wants to expand MAP grant access for higher education, but he would not commit to that 16% budget figure. He said, you know, obviously we have a lot of fiscal challenges in our state, and he's committed to supporting universities, but he was not ready to commit. And that, as Charlie said, sometimes the role of these agencies is to sort of put out what their sort of pie in the sky ideal is, and then the policymakers have to come in and balance that against the many competing demands on state resources.
And Daisy, when you have as many ideas as maybe the governor has, and the ideas being thrown at him as well, he does have some ideas to raise revenue, but it's not all money that would necessarily be freed up to just pump into education, higher education, things like that. He's talked about a capital program. There's other things he wants to do.
Yeah, legalizing recreational marijuana is one of them, sports gambling, a lot of different ideas that are still not on, you know, figured out just how they're going to work just yet.
And speaking of the marijuana, because this comes up a lot, we've talked about this before, but Jacqueline, just in a few seconds here, so far, they do not know how that money, they don't know exactly how much money they would raise from it, how it would be put together for a program, and then also, we don't know where the money would go.
Right. My understanding is they're still waiting for results from a demand study to see what the demand is going to be, and they also don't know how they're going to tax it yet. They don't know where the money is going to go. They have some ideas, but we'll have to wait until the bill is filed, which we don't know when that's coming, I'm told, very early.
Okay. Time now for our notes from the field. Brian?
Yeah, there's an interesting case argued at the Illinois Supreme Court this week. This is the continuing fallout from a federal U.S. Supreme Court decision a few years back that basically ruled that life sentences for juveniles were unconstitutional. And so the Illinois Supreme Court's being asked to decide this week about the case of a 16-year-old who terribly shot somebody. They thought they were shooting into a rival gang member's car, and instead it wasn't. An innocent woman was killed. But this person was sentenced to 50 years in prison. They would be 66 years old when he got out. And the question before the court is a 50-year sentence for a teenager basically a life sentence?
Daisy?
Friday is the last day the Justice Department is processing funding requests for sexual violence survivors crisis centers across the country, and this is due to the partial government shutdown. I spoke to Carrie Ward, who is the executive director of the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Assault, which is a network of 30 crisis centers across the state. She said federal money makes up about 60% of their overall funding. Right now, they are fine, but depending on how long the shutdown lasts, they could start cutting back on counselors and advocates. Crisis centers also use some state dollars. State Comptroller Susanna Mendoza said her office doesn't currently have any vouchers for rape crisis centers on her desk, but she plans to expedite payments as soon as the vouchers do start coming in.
Okay, Jacqueline?
Keeping with the partial federal government shutdown theme, Farm Service Agency offices are going to temporarily reopen for a short period of time to help assist farmers with existing farm loans and make sure that they are all squared away for their tax documents by the IRS deadline.
And Charlie?
Well, Governor Pritzker went down to Belleville this past week and signed an executive order that would require the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to review our workforce training with an eye towards figuring out which areas, which industries show the potential for future growth so that our training programs and our resources can be focused on the ones that show the most promise. And it's a good idea, but to me what was notable is that he was down there in Belleville at a community college, and he was joined by at least one Republican lawmaker in a show of bipartisan support.
Okay, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Jacqueline Driscoll. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.